Well, it's been such a pleasure to be with you. And at this time, I want to sum up what we've talked about with four particular images. Of course, the first image that occurs for us is the image of the saints in glory. Okay.
No, I didn't know you were going to go last.
So. Oh, okay. That's all right. That's all right. The saints in glory, for we're celebrating All Saints Day, and what a wonderful way to sum up our time together and enjoy the fellowship that we've enjoyed is just a foretaste of the fellowship that we long for, that we look for, that we yearn for in the age to come. So this is a great joy, and I think that the fellowship that we've had really helps to bring that image to life, because this really, truly is a foretaste of what that will be. The second image that I want to point to is an image in motion. I want you to imagine that you're following Jesus around in the Gospels, not down with him, but up above him. Perhaps I don't think there were too many helicopters in the Holy Land in the time of Jesus, but imagine yourself above Jesus and looking down at the action below. As you watch him, he has a strong group of followers that follow him, a very close group of people, and wherever he goes, they go with him. They're so tightly packed that if somebody wants to touch him, they have to push their way and sneak their way through the crowd. And then everybody is so close together that you can touch him without him knowing who is touching him. That's how tight this group is. This group is so tight that when they go into a house, it fills the house. And if anybody wants to see him, they have to break through the roof and come down and lower their friend down to speak to him. You get the picture, right? This very close crowd to Jesus. Now, this very close crowd to Jesus are asking him all the most important theological questions, right? When do we eat? Do you want us to send down fire from heaven on these folks? Can I have the best seat in heaven, please? When you think about it, the people who are closest to Jesus act as if they haven't heard a single thing that he has said. It is really quite remarkable. It is so dense in this place, and I don't mean dense in terms of people. It is so dense that I call this area around him the duh zone. And that's why they're called disciples. So And if you get a dog gree, they give you one of these collars. See? So, truly, they act as if they have not heard a single word he is saying. And in this da zone, we find many of the same things that we battle against in the church. You know, the jostling for position. The concern about minor details; these are the things that we worry about. These are the things that worry us. But there is another circle of people, much more sparsely populated, and this group is outside of the ring of those closest to Jesus, and. It's people like blind Bartimaeus, who, when he hears that Jesus is passing by, shouts out to him And Jesus speaks to him over the crowd. It's people like the woman at the well. It's like the widow of Nain. All of these people who are outside the closest group. And Jesus touches them. He touches their lives, and they are never the same again. Their lives are immediately transformed. This area outside of him, Zacchaeus, the man born blind at birth, all of these people, I call that the gospel zone. Because this more sparsely populated area is a place where Jesus connects with people, and he connects with them so powerfully that once they're touched, they're never the same again. They're never the same again. And some of you have been in that gospel zone. Maybe all of us at one time or another have been in that gospel zone. But it is so important for us to see the dynamics of this reality, because oftentimes when we find ourselves in the gospel zone, we feel ourselves alienated. We feel alone. We feel away from the fellowship of the church. We feel on our own and afraid, perhaps. It's at that moment that we should remember the immediacy of Christ. And this gospel zone is the zone of grace. This gospel zone is the zone of salvation. This gospel zone is how we should understand our reading from Luke, this Sermon on the Plain, as it is called, very much like the Sermon on the Mount. Because when you read that, it doesn't make any sense from the dar zone, but it makes all kinds of sense in the gospel zone. What he is describing in this gospel is the gospel zone, where that place where we meet Christ, where we encounter him. A very important gospel image, one that we should keep at all times. Our prayer life, our discipline, our discipleship should keep us in the gospel zone. We should stay there. We should stay there. Not get caught up in the minute details of institutional life. They have their place, and we shouldn't ignore them. But we should always let our heart live in the gospel zone. Let our minds and our hearts live in the gospel zone. So that's the second image I wanted to bring up. The third image that I wanted to bring up comes from Luke chapter 10. The powerful sending out of the 70, in some versions 72. Jesus redirects the traffic of ancient life. During the time of Jesus, people didn't travel much. In fact, the only good reason to travel was to go from wherever your town was to the center of Jewish life, which was the temple in Jerusalem. And people didn't just say, well, you know, honey, let's take the kids and go to Jericho. You know, they it's so beautiful this time of year. They didn't think that way. They didn't think that way at all. They were very traditional in their thinking. And you don't travel for just no good reason at all. You have to have a good reason to travel. And so when Jesus comes to his disciples and says that he is going to redirect them from away from the temple to small villages, and that he's going to send them out on their own, and just they'll just appear without any announcement, they have to be terrified. And then he says, eat anything that they put in front of you. And I can tell you, as the Bishop of Alaska, they put some pretty strange things in front of you. I've had to eat things that if you wouldn't want me to talk about just after breakfast, that's for sure. So you have to understand the dynamics of this, the fear that must have been running through the disciples as they heard this. Now, what's interesting is that when you went to the temple in Jerusalem, you would go in and then you would acknowledge God's presence in that place, and then you would turn your life around. It was a time of repentance, a time of renewal, a time of restoration. What's interesting is that when Jesus sends people out to the various communities, he says, enter a house, and if they'll keep you there, stay there and offer that your peace to that place, and then say to them, the kingdom of God is at hand. Turn around and believe the good news. This is a powerful, powerful thing, because what he is saying is that you are going to make every household a place, a temple of God. You are going to make every heart a place where God resides. Instead of having one holy place where people live, he redirects the traffic and he makes our house, our home, our hearts, he makes them a holy place. Now, this is a powerful, powerful image. But what I want to say here is we have been talking all weekend about God, our refuge and strength. And the incredible thing about this Luke 10 passage is that Jesus says to all of us, you're going to go to strange and foreign places. You're going to talk to people you've never met before. I'm going to put you in places where you will be so far away from your comfort zone, you won't believe it. But what he says is, I will be a refuge to you there. I will be your help. I will be your support. I will take care of you. All you need is me. He says, don't take anything with you. You don't need anything, because with me, you have everything you have. Now, in our type of evangelism that we've been through, we have, for the most part, tried to get people to come to our temples.
Yes.
Right? What Jesus is saying is, go out to their homes. Speak to them personally and individually. Go out and put yourselves in their hospitality. Oftentimes churches worry about their hospitality, and that's a good thing. I'm not saying anything bad about it. But the mission of Jesus is very different. He is asking us to place ourselves in the hands of others' hospitalities, people who we don't know, people who are different from us, people who are not like us at all. So this image, I think, is part of what we're being called to. Trust that God is going to use you, take you out, put you in places where you will encounter other people, men and women, children perhaps. When you encounter them, and you will be used by God to create a new community, a new world with them. You will be used to bring the gospel zone to them. This is our task as we leave this place, is we're being sent out to take our banners with us, right, Carrie? To take our banners with us, and to bring others back, to make every house we encounter a holy place, to make every heart we encounter a place where God dwells. This is our task. The final image that I talk about, we've talked about three: the saints, the gospel zone, and the being sent out. The final one is from our song, On Eagle's Wings. I think this is such a powerful one, and it's so important for us as we leave this place. The image, and he will bear you up on eagle's wings. I read Michael Jonkis. I read an article that he wrote about writing this song, and he said that he had seen this image. It's found in Deuteronomy. It's found in other places as well. One other place, I think, in the Psalms, but. He will bear you up on eagle's wings. When it comes time to teach the young eaglets to fly, they're thrust out of the nest on their own. And apparently, they usually sink like a stone, you know. They don't really know what they're doing. And as they fall, as they tumble, as they're probably thinking, oh my gosh, Mom has just tried to kill me. What happens then is that the mother eagle will come underneath and bear them up on her own wings. That's the image. That's the image. And what a beautiful image for when we go from this place, hey? We will encounter trials. We will find ourselves in new situations. We will find the things that have happened to us will be tested. The things that we have learned, we will be called upon to put them into practice. And all of those things may feel to us like we're sinking like a stone. What God says is, I will come and I will bear you up on eagle's wings. So, our theme this weekend has been God, my refuge and my stronghold. And you remember that I began by talking about John the Baptist and Mary. I used Mary as an image of our refuge and John as the image of our stronghold. And yesterday we had two presentations, one where we talked about the presence of God, the power of God in our lives, and the promises of God in regard to God's presence. The second thing is we had a very serious talk yesterday about our stronghold, God, our stronghold, as against the strongholds, the strongholds of evil that exist. Paul speaks about that in 2 Corinthians in 10, and in many of the translations, they actually use the term stronghold. Stronghold not of God, but stronghold of evil. So, there's a beautiful passage in Matthew 16. It took me a long time to understand it. When Jesus says he's going to build his church upon a rock, he says the gates of hell will not prevail against it. The gates of hell will not prevail against it. You know, for some reason, I always heard that wrong. I always heard that there was this gate, and I saw us on the other side of the gate, and I was thinking that Satan would not be able to get through the gate at us, you know? And I saw myself scared and inside the gate, but confident because Jesus said it wouldn't prevail. But I read that completely wrong. It's the other way around. It's the other way around. The gates of hell will not prevail against God's power. Against God's power. Exactly. Kick the door down. These strongholds, these areas in life of systemic evil, Jesus says, those strongholds will not prevail. They will not prevail. The power of God will prevail against them. So, my dear brothers, it's been such a pleasure to be with you, to learn with you, to discuss with you, to pray with you, to sing with you. It truly has been a foretaste of the age to come.